Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lifonov El Esav Achiv Arza Seir Sedei Edom. Then Yaakov sent angels ahead of him to Esav his brother to the land of Seir, the field of Edom. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayishlach. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 12th day of Kislev, 5775, corresponding to December 4th. If you are a regular listener, you know that last week I did not record a show. I took the show from 2 years ago and just added a voice synthesized announcement about that fact. And I don't know what happened. I had a sore throat, cough, and then I lost my voice. It's slowly coming back, so I'm recording. I found that when I tried to lean the first pasuk, it was harder than just speaking. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to get through the show with talking. And I found it ironic that last week when I went to the previous year's Vayetze, I found that there wasn't a Vayetze then either. And that was because of a computer glitch that erased half the show, and then I was out of time and I had to go out of town. So I never did a Vayetze for 5774 nor 75, but Emir Tzashem, the show will carry on for Vayishlach. And there's a common theme which we need to tie together anyway. So let's start with Tehillim Kuflamid, Psalm 130. And then we'll get ourselves into the Sedra. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shema v'koli, tehiyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi'amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbeimo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula. Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Special thanks to Flo and Larry of Baltimore for their get well wishes after last week's non-show. Let's take this first verse in Vayishlach, which I read, because it starts already with a question. Yaakov sent Malachim. I read you the Art Scroll Stone Edition Chumash translation, which says that Jacob sent angels. Rashi, on the word Malachim, says actual angels. Malachim Mamash. And in support of that, the very last part of the previous Sedra Vayetze is that when Yaakov was on his way back to the land of Israel after his long sojourn in the house of Lavan, He says, the Torah says that Yaakov went on his way. Vayifgu vo malachei Elokim. And angels of God encountered him. Yaakov said to said when he saw them, "This is a godly camp. Ze machane Elokim ze, vayikra shem hamakom hahu machanayim," and he called the name of the place Machanayim, double camp. So commentaries there say, just as Yaakov dreamt when he was leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Haran, Padan Aram, he had a dream of a ladder with its feet on the ground and its head reaching the heavens, and angels going up and down the ladder. So some want to suggest that the Sedra of Vayetze comes full circle. He goes out of Eretz Yisrael. He has his time with Lavan, has two wives or four wives, however you want to count them, and 11 sons and a daughter, Dina, and amasses a lot of sheep and goats, and takes his leave and heads back to his father's home in Canaan, in the land of Israel. And he has a vision. Now, this could be literal. This could be a vision. This could be a dream, like he started with, of angels, which have a similar function to the first set of angels in the beginning of Vayetze, when we are taught that the angels that accompany him in Eretz Yisrael don't go out of Eretz Yisrael, and a new set of angels that keep watch over Yaakov, so to speak, in Chutz La'aretz. And then there's a changing of the guard again when he comes back. If that's the case, then if we're talking about actual encounter of angels, then when the Torah says that Yaakov sent Malachim, it could be actual angels, as Rashi suggests. Targum Onkelos uses a word which translates as messengers, which would be the plain meaning of Malachim. And there are several other places in the Torah where Malachim were sent, and we understand them more as emissaries, human beings, rather than heavenly angels. And that's a question about what that means in the first place. So we'll leave it at that. On the lighter side, the opening theme, which I'm sure many people of a certain age and ilk recognized as a theme from the TV show back in the 70s, Charlie's Angels. Because they weren't actual angels. They were, well, detectives and a fighting force. But they were human beings called angels. And that's why I chose that theme for this dispute as to whether they were actual angels or messengers that Yaakov sent ahead of him for his encounter with Esav. I want to digress for a moment, but it's not really a digression, because it's going to come to be a very significant part of the show. Last week, I didn't just plug in the show from 2 years ago. I listened to it, and I wanted to see if it was appropriate to replay. The second part, which dwelt with content of the Seder, was fine. The first part focused on the current events at the time, where we were suffering under rocket attacks, and I wove that in to the Sedra theme. And then when I'm listening to that, I said, "Oh, I got to cut that out, because that's not what's happening." And then I said, which I think I said at the end, it really doesn't matter what particular means our enemies choose and employ at any given time, it's all a variation of the same theme. So I left it in last time, hoping that people would listen and translate rockets and mortars into speeding cars near the light rail station, and axes and knives and guns. And the most recent incident that's been reported is two stabbings yesterday. And we are dealing with a situation that comes in variations, has at the moment relatively little pause to take a breath when there's something else. It hit me very, very strongly that in our memories, the way they work, the way we think currently, the big event was the Har-Nof Shul massacre. And if you take a little step back and adjust your focus, you realize that it was not many months ago that three teens were kidnapped and were murdered and were missing for a period of time until their bodies were found. And then there was a war which cost us more than 60 soldiers, and other things that have happened. I mentioned the speeding car next to a train. That's even receding in memory, not because we want to forget it or we should forget it, but because things happened since. It's spooky the way the imagination goes. Part of the reason I'm bringing this up, and I called it a digression, which it really isn't, is there's a fellow to whom I deliver a package of 25 Torah tidbits most weeks, many weeks, to his office in town. He lives in a community out of town where he hands this package over to someone else who lives in a different community out of town, and the population of English speakers receive Torah tidbits in this way. So yesterday I went with the package to deliver to this fellow, and I knock on his office door. He opens the door. I hand him the package. He says, "Got a few minutes to see something." I said, "Okay," and he excitedly rushes me over to his computer, and he pulls up on the screen a video clip which he received from Israel Television News of part of the first car attack at the light rail station. And I didn't see any part of where the car actually plowed into that group of people, but I did see the car streaming down right next to the train, very fast, in an attempt to hit people. So as I'm watching, he points out a fellow whose image was hard to make out, wearing a knapsack, who managed to jump out of the way of the car, actually at the last second. I mean, he was inches away from very serious injury or worse. He said to me, "That was me." And see that knapsack that I'm wearing on my back? That knapsack had in it the package of Torah tidbits. And I believed that I was worthy of a miracle to be saved from this terrorist attack because I was delivering Torah tidbits to an out-of-town community. He doesn't know that for sure. I don't know that for sure. That's not the point. He was excited to show this to me, because that's how he reacted. So I don't know if this will go into the Torah Tidbits next week or it'll go into our archives or whatever, but it was an amazing thing to hear from this fellow. Now, I don't want to lose the thread, so let me go a little bit further into the Sedra and speak what's really on my mind and in my heart. And it's not that I haven't said anything like this last week or the week before. The background, of course, is that in Parshat Toledot, Yitzchak and Rivka have twins. Esav comes out first, then Yaakov. And Yaakov acquires the birthright from Esav and later acquires the blessing that Yitzchak had intended originally to give to Esav. And Rivka, the mother, finds out that Esav is plotting to kill Yaakov, his brother, after Yitzchak will die. And she needs to protect her son, actually both her sons, one from committing a murder and one from being murdered and possibly killing the other in the process. So she tells Yitzchak that she's disgusted with the thought that Yaakov will marry a local Canaanite girl and wants Yitzchak to send Yaakov to her hometown, her family, to find a suitable wife there. And so it happens. And Vayetze begins that Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva on his way to Haran, and he has his dream, and he meets Rachel, and he marries, but first there was a switch, and he got Leah, and then Rachel, and each had a handmaiden, and the story unfolds in Parshat Vayetze in very rapid form. The growth of Yaakov's family, he has Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda from Leah. Then Rachel was barren and wanted a child, and she offered her handmaiden, Bilhah, to Yaakov, that he should sleep with her and have a child, which she will raise as her own. And so it happens, and Dan and then Naphtali are born. And then Leah realizes that she has stopped giving birth, becoming pregnant, and she gives her handmaiden Zilpah to Yaakov, and they have two more children, Gad and Asher. And then Leah has two more sons, Yisachar and Zevulun. And finally Rachel becomes pregnant and has Yosef. Right before that, Leah had a girl named Dinah. And there's a whole thing with that, but we don't have to get into that now. It's the wrong Sedra. It's not the this week's Sedra. It's not the wrong Sedra. But, and then, as I said before, Yaakov takes his leave. So now, he's on his way back, and he finds out that he's going to run into his brother, Esav, of whom he is very afraid. And he takes measures to provide gifts and conciliatory words and also prepares to be attacked and implores God to save him from his brother and from Esav, even though his brother is Esav and Esav is his brother. There are two connotations to what my brother means and what Esav means. I'm purposely skipping over the episode of the wrestling match between Yaakov and the Ish, who we are told by tradition was the guardian angel of Esav. There are a lot of different shades to that interpretation of exactly who Yaakov encountered, whom. Yaakov encountered and fought against. Some say it was his inner self, and some say it was the guardian of Esav. Let's leave that for a moment. When the brothers finally meet, the Torah says that Esav sees Yaakov, sees his wives and children and his entourage, and runs towards him. After Yaakov bows to Esav 7 times, and he hugs him and he kisses him. The Torah's word, "and he kissed him," Vayishakehu, has in a Sefer Torah dots written by the scribe above each letter of the word Vayishakehu. That is the scribal equivalent of an asterisk. An asterisk calls your attention to something. It could be that Roger Maris hit 61 home runs, breaking Babe Ruth's record of 60 in a season, but Maris had a 162-game season where Babe Ruth had only 154. Whatever the asterisk is on, it is meant to call our attention to something. And sure enough, we look at the premier commentary to Torah, that of Rashi. I remember growing up in elementary school being taught that Rashi was our best friend for learning Torah. And Rashi says, what are those dots doing there? There is a machloket, a dispute. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah tidbits for Parshat Vayishlach in a moment. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayishlach. We were talking about the kiss, when Esav hugged Yaakov and kissed him. So Rashi brings down two different opinions. One, that the reason the asterisk, so to speak, is there is to indicate that it was not a sincere kiss. Esav did not like Yaakov. He had bones to pick with him. He had wanted to kill him, and he kissed him insincerely. The other opinion is attributed to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who says, even though there is a well-known law of Jewish life that Esav hates Yaakov, at this moment he was overwhelmed by his feeling of brotherly love and kissed him with all his heart. A noteworthy kiss, hence the scribal dots. Notice there are a couple of noteworthy points on this Rashi. Number one, it does not bring down two conflicting opinions, except about this particular kiss. Both opinions recognize that Esav hates Yaakov. And the first opinion says, including now when the kiss wasn't sincere. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, yes, Esav hates Yaakov, but at this moment, it was a sincere kiss. Second part of that, in my opinion, is that we can't afford to look at the exceptions to the rule. We need to look at the rule. The rule is halacha bihi biyadua she'esav sone le'Yaakov. It is a halacha, a rule of Jewish life, that Esav hates Yaakov. You know, there's always that question. There was an old joke about lawyers, so I apologize in advance. About lawyers have such a bad reputation, which is not fair. It shouldn't be that 99% of the lawyers spoil it for the other 1%. No offense meant to lawyers. My father was a lawyer. My grandfather was a lawyer. I have a cousin who's a lawyer. Two cousins who are lawyers. And friends who are lawyers. But that's the old joke. So the question is, how should we relate to the Asavs of the world today. First, let me make something clear. I think I've said this in the past. I've written it. I am not now claiming that today's Arabs are descendants of Esav. They claim to be descendants of Yishmael. Let's say, okay, maybe, probably, whatever. Not relevant. Because when I say Esav, I mean the style of Esav and his grandson Amalek and his great-great-great-great-great-grandson Haman, and those might be genealogically true Esav descendants, Amalek descendants, but it doesn't change the fact that in much more recent times, a Hitler, Yimach Shemo, does not need to be genealogically matched to the descent of Esav or Amalek to say that he embodied the Amalek philosophy, the Amalek goal, the Esav goal. Esav was the uncle of the original Amalek. And according to the Midrashim, he spoke to his grandson and said, look, I've succeeded and I have failed to vanquish Yaakov. I leave it to you to do the job on Yaakov's descendants. And the original Amalek nation tried it, and subsequently, and in variations of the themes, we have had Esav / Amalek types plaguing us throughout Jewish history. So it doesn't matter to me, I don't think it matters, whether Hamas or the PA or individuals or self-proclaimed freedom fighters, who we call terrorists, get it into their head to destroy Jews and to attempt to destroy the Jewish people and the state of Israel. They are Esav, they are Amalek, and they fit Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's description of halacha hi biyadua she'esav sonei liyakov. When there was a case a while back of an Arab young woman who was badly burned by her family as punishment for her flirting with somebody, or maybe more than that, I don't know. She was treated in Israeli hospitals for her burns, and then she was visited on an outpatient basis repeatedly across the crossing from Gaza into Israel to the hospital in Beersheba, I think it was, and then back. And one time she was caught at the border wearing an explosive belt, a belt of explosives. And she was arrested, and she was asked, how could you think of doing such a thing to people who took you in when you were badly disfigured and injured, brought you back to good health, and treated you repeatedly on an ongoing basis? How could you do that? And she said, my family said they would forgive me if I wore this explosive vest, blew myself up in the hospital, and killed as many Jews as I could. This is halacha biyadua. Halacha hi biyadua she'esav sonei liyakov. And we cannot let our guard down. It's more than that. We need to find the way to be proactive. Now, I know that this is not politically correct in certain circles, because they answer with righteous justification, not all Arabs want to kill Jews. Correct. What percentage of the Arab population in Israel and nearby want to kill Jews? Oh, I don't know, they say. 50%? 70%? 30? I don't care if it's 1%. And it's certainly more than 1%. But 1% is very significant to be on guard and proactive in preventing further tragedies. When we published ads in the Torah Tidbits for companies like a painter who writes on it, Jewish labor, a house mover, Jewish labor, they are doing something which, again, in certain circles is not politically correct. How can you discriminate against a whole people for what? A handful? Please. Not a handful. It's more than a handful. It's a barrel full. It's a truckload. It's a significant number. Some are actually crazy enough to blow themselves up to kill Jews. Some are brazen enough to throw firebombs and shoot and wield an axe and hope to get away with it, and stab and throw Molotov cocktails and throw whatever. And some are passive enough to not actively pursue harming Jews, but they cheer and they reward the perpetrators of horrendous terrorist activity. They declare them martyrs and heroes, and they name streets after them and schools after them and parks after them. So give me a break when you say, how can you put an ad in Torah Tidbits that says, for a painter, Jewish labor? The answer is, people are afraid to have an Arab working for them in their home when perhaps the woman is alone or the children are around. And this does not mean that every Arab worker who works in a Jewish home is going to do harm. But there have been sufficient cases where it's happened. How could this guy have killed his friend, his colleague, his co-worker? Sounds like a rhetorical question, but the answer is they want to kill. They do, I'm saying they, and don't give me any, whatever you want to call it, how can you say they? They all don't, correct, I'll say it again, and it doesn't change the fact that we have a serious problem. We have enemies, and worse enemies, and worser enemies, as my children used to say before they straightened out their English. We have people who barely tolerate our existence. We have people who, when they're asked, favor our disappearance. Significant percentages of Arab populations favor the destruction of the state of Israel. And if it means killing Jews, then so be it. So this is what the Sedra is talking about. It's not, here, sit on my knee and I will tell you what happened 3,000, 4,000 years ago, 3,500 years ago, whatever, that there was an Esav who wanted to kill his twin brother. Today, there are Esav types who want to kill the Yaakovs in this world. And the Yaakovs in this world are us, the Jewish people. So the Sedra is very alive. That kiss is very significant because we have been kissed and embraced and handshakes from sort of sincere, very sincere, not sincere at all. It's very, very hard to tell. There are watchdog groups who watch carefully and will say, yes, Abbas condemned the horrific attack of a synagogue, but did he say anything in the Arab media in Arabic? No. He was forced to come out in condemnation of that attack by Secretary of State Kerry from the United States. Did not do it out of his goodness of his heart, and he does not express a desire to live in peace with Israel. He wants this and that and more, and he's not interested in giving any slack. I don't even know why I bothered saying that, because we don't want slack from him. The best case scenario, in my opinion, is that they should continue having autonomy in the dense Arab populations within the borders of Israel, but certainly not their own state. Sorry if that offends anybody. Don't need the establishment of a sovereign government dedicated to the destruction of Israel and dedicated to having no Jews in their territory and dedicated to violence to get what they want. Before Yaakov and Esav meet, Yaakov finds himself alone after he brought his family and his possessions across the Yabok stream. And commentaries say, based on our tradition, that he went back because he forgot some little flasks of oil, the oil he used to anoint the monuments and altars that he erected in God's honor. And there are other things that are said about those flasks, but the bottom line there is he found himself alone and he was attacked by the Sar Shel Esav. Sar Shel Esav is what we call him. The Torah says, Vayeyavek Ish Imo. Shlomo Kalbach made a song which combined Vayevater Yaakov Livado, that Yaakov found himself alone, and Venisgav Hashem Livado, that God is singular and alone. Put them two together into a famous song, which we will listen to now, and then we'll wrap up the issue.
One, two, three, four.
Sasha, 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 Sas
That was a track called Veniskov of Mordechai Ben David, the one from Shlomo Carlbach, which I had downloaded, did not open in the program I used to record the show, but you got the idea. Both of those psukim ping-ponging back and forth. The Sedra ends, a major, major portion of it, with the chronology and lineage of Esav. So there's a message, it's only an idea, that the Torah, which is the book for the Jewish people and for Jewish life, starts with creation, starts with Noah, human beings, and whatever human beings interact with us or gave rise to us are important also. So Esav is not dismissed. There is extensive listing of his genealogy because he remains a force in this world, unfortunately primed against the Jewish people, as in Halachahi Biyadua Esav Sonei Liyakov. It's not something we can stick our head in the sand and dismiss. It's a reality of Jewish life. And we need to not cower before it. We need to stand strong. And even when it's not politically correct to say certain things and to do certain things, we have to do it for the continued survival and security of the Jewish people. On that note, I wish you Shabbat Shalom. The Hishtameah.